Get me for free. Courtesy of Yelp for Restaurant. Tools and tactics are what's going to make you successful in 2024. Yelp for Restaurants has the tools you need to scale your restaurant this year, and I'm here to help. Sign up for a consultation with Yelp Guest Manager and get a free one-hour coaching session with me. In our session, we'll dive deep into your restaurant and build the blueprint to overcome your current obstacles and scale your profitability. You can sign up for both free sessions by simply going to restaurants.yelp.com/full comp today. I'll see you soon. Now here we go.
Everybody dreams. The dream without the discipline. You will never go anywhere. And that's why I'm grateful that I grew up on a farm where mom and dad told me to push through and never stop, never give up. Don't stop until the task is done. And that's what we learned on the farm. And so perseverance is what I learned.
Welcome to Full Comp, a show offering insight into the hospitality industry, featuring restaurateurs, thought leaders, and innovators. Served up on the house. Are you on track to hit your profitability goals for this year? If you're struggling to hit your numbers, I might be able to help. Here's how I do it. Every year, I offer 5 complimentary growth sessions to restaurant owners looking to scale. In this call, we'll examine your current situation to see what is and isn't working. We'll identify your growth possibilities by the close of the year. We'll uncover the number one thing holding you and your business back. And we'll develop a growth plan that will get your business results. Go to planwithjosh.com to schedule one of the 5 complimentary growth sessions. They're going to go quickly. They always do. 3 words for you. Global Pretzel Empire. Today we're chatting with Ann Beiler, the founder of Auntie Ann's Pretzels and the author of the book, Overcome and Lead. We sit down to discuss the best practices she's honed while scaling this company and the lessons she's learned along the way. Time and time again, we keep hearing the same foundational idea revisited. Personal growth is professional growth.
I grew up in the Amish community and on a farm, Amish farm, and there was 8 of us kids and mom and dad who loved us and showed us all about how to be family, how to have faith, how to work really, really hard, and how to get along. And they taught us it was really important to love people. And so that's really sounds very simple, I guess, but on their part, it was very intentional that all of their children one day have their own life and make their own way through life. They taught us to be contributors to society rather than just a taking from others, but it was all about making our own way. So growing up in that very, I'm going to say idyllic almost, very simple lifestyle, I'm really excited to say that I think that they taught me all I needed to know to get through life. I'm just grateful for parents that were there for me. There wasn't a day that went by that mom and dad were not there for us. So I'm just grateful for that.
What was the professional evolution of your career? I mean, I would assume that you took the path that so many of us did, from employee to entrepreneur. And when were those seeds sown, and how did it ultimately evolve into the company?
Well, initially, I think the seeds were sown actually way back in the day when I was growing up as a kid. My dad was a farmer, but he was also, I wouldn't have called him an entrepreneur back in the day, but he really was, because as a farmer, we never had enough money. So he was always trying new things and trying to make a little extra cash just to get by. And one of those things he did was he went to farmers markets, and as kids, we would go along and work the market stand. So I don't know. I think the roots go way back to that, where when I started Auntie Ann's in 1988, my very first store, voila, was a farmer's market. So I was fascinated by that because I thought, wow, okay, it's like full circle. I was 40 at that time when we started the company. So when I started Auntie Ann's in a farmer's market, it really felt comfortable, and I didn't feel stretched in any way as far as just starting a store, but we had never owned a company before, never owned any business of any sort. My husband did car repairs in a very small way in our community, and that was what we did for a living. But as far as owning a business and taking something and launching it further than like one little market stand, nobody I knew ever did that. So we really hadn't planned on doing more than one stand. And a part of the reason we started Auntie Anne's was, I'll keep this really short, but we'd been married a couple of years and we're living our dream, just a little Amish girl. My husband was a little Amish boy, and we found each other in our teens. And our only dream was really to be like our parents and have a family and have a bunch of kids and just live life like they did. But what happened for us was the tragic death of our 19-month-old daughter, and a few shortly thereafter, our grief so deep that we, my husband and I, completely, almost completely disconnected. And my pastor, I was no longer in the Amish culture at that time, so we had left that culture, that religion, or we never went to the Amish church anymore. So we were in another denomination. But so my pastor there then asked me to come and talk to him. And because he noticed I was sad and he knew about our daughter's death. And so I went to talk to him. And before I left his office, he took advantage of me. I'm telling you this, of Josh, because it's a big part of my story. And as we unpack my story, you'll understand better why I had all of these internal issues that I had to really overcome. And so when that happened to us, to me in my life, that was a 7 very dark years of abuse of every kind that I thought I was going to choke to death spiritually, emotionally, and I thought I was going to die physically. So life was kind of over for me at one point. And as we got through that, and then we never imagined that, I never imagined, because it was a very deep secret that nobody knew about. But when I was finally able to tell, then my husband knew. And so the two of us, you know, got on this, wow, we got back on the wagon together and tried to make this work. And it was very, very hard. But we never imagined in the early days of that open, the truth of my lifestyle, that we would ever overcome and then experience one of the most exciting ventures of our life called Auntie Anne's. It was really not in our plan. But Jonas, because of our trauma and tragedy and abuse, and he was kind of like a fix-it kind of guy. He was always trying to figure everything out. So he was one of the biggest questions. He kept asking, how did this happen to us? So he ended up being trained to be a counselor. And because of that, then he became passionate about helping other families in trouble, other marriages, kids, and family issues. So he became a counselor in our community and beyond, and did it as a free service. And that's why I went to work, because I loved my husband. He kept our family alive and well. He loved me. And because of that, I really wanted to just whatever I needed to do for him. He never required and he never asked me for anything, but it was in my heart to honor him and respect him. And so I said to him one day, I'll go to work so that you can keep counseling. And that's what I did. And that's why we started Auntie Anne's. And that's why I talk a lot about purpose in my book and wherever I go speak.
I want to delve directly into the book, but before we do, I have a question. You said something interesting before we started the interview that I wanted to share, because I think that everybody wants to know, like, how did you achieve massive success? And the truth is that a lot of it is you and leadership and vision, and we're going to get into that. But an equally large part of it is people, the people that you bring onto the team. You had mentioned it before, like, I don't deal with the numbers. We have really smart people to deal with that. And how blessed am I that I have those people in my life and my business. But it seems like something that you figured out really early on was that it has less to do with how and a lot more to do with who. And so when you saw the opportunity to grow this to arguably massive proportion, who did you bring on? Who were the critical hires that you guys made? Who were the partners that you brought on that really enabled the growth of the company?
I know that you can tell by reading my book, Overcome and Lead, that we were not this amazing. We didn't have this great plan, or we were not even planning on doing more than one store. And so it evolved. The product itself took us around the world. So the people that we brought into initially, you have to understand that Jonas and I, neither one of us had formal education. We didn't have a business plan. We had no capital when we started. Disaster is what everybody would say, yes, but that's where I think we began to dream about, as we noticed people loving the product. And within days, the product was really bad at first. And we just kept working at it. And finally, we came up with the Auntie Anne product. And we just kept tweaking and trying new things. And finally, we came up with the product. When we had perfected the product, which took us only one day, but we knew for about 2 months it was horrible. But it took us just a moment to perfect it. And when we did that, the lines became so long that we could not keep up. So we had to bring more ovens, and we got rid of all of our other snack foods. And all we focused on was pretzels and lemonade. So that was the initial start for us. So when we went from one store to two the first year, then 12 the next year, and then 35 the next year, that's when things got really difficult. By now, by the third year, we were in the corporate world, in the malls across America. We're just starting. And so the initial hires that I had were just simply my family. My brother had a degree in business, and he came in as a manager, and he came in and compartmentalized and set up different departments. And I was like, I'm all about the people. And he was all about the business end of it. So my brother was really very instrumental. And within about a year of him being there, we realized at that time we were licensing, but we realized at that time we got more information about what we're actually doing. We're franchising. So then we went to Chicago. It was a company called Frank Corp. We went out there and yes, you're franchising. And we already had about 35, maybe 40 stores. And we could have been in deep trouble, but we worked it all out. So we brought in people that were experts in the franchise world. We also brought in expert trainers. We brought in people that were able to in the financial world. So experts in the field. And that's one thing I often say or talk about is when you're starting your company, find people that know more than you do. I mean, it will save you a boatload of problems. That's what we did. So we really, in time, Josh, we got experts and brought them into our company. And the product and the name Aunt Anne's was all new back then. But I don't know, there was such an excitement about the product that we interviewed, they wanted to work with Aunt Anne. So that's how we started.
And look, I would say that the pandemic hit when I was 40 years old.
Oh, wow.
At 40 years old, I felt like I had very little to show for my efforts. I was starting over, all over again. You know, because I think for so many in the industry, the pandemic just kind of wiped away decades
absolutely.
Of effort. I found myself starting fresh. And it was really hard to look at my family or look in the mirror and not feel like I was failing or that it was too late. And that, I mean, now I'm old, right? How can my life start now? And you were 40 years old, the genesis of this experience. What was it like starting fresh then? And was there any imposter syndrome? Were there any doubts related to, am I too old to go on this adventure? Has my moment passed?
Oh, absolutely. At the age of 37, I really thought life was over for me because of all the things that had happened to us. So when this started with Auntie Anne's, it was a complete surprise. It wasn't like we were out looking for a business or I don't know. Somebody came to us and said, the store is for sale. Are we interested? We had no money, but we went to my very wealthy Amish father-in-law. He said, sure, I'll loan you the $6,000 that you need to get started. So that's how we started. But Josh, if you have a great product, well, maybe I should go back to, did I ever feel like it was too late? Yes. When I was 38, 39, 40, all my friends, they own homes. I don't know. We were living in a trailer that my husband was fixing up for free rent at that time. And we both really felt like, well, we're really glad we got through all the darkness in our life. But wow, we really wish that we could own our own home or have enough money to do anything with. So that's where we were. But when we started the company and when we had the opportunity to buy this store that already had pretzels there and some other snack foods, it was very scary because, again, I'm thinking, I'm 40. I don't know, but I got to do something to make ends meet, right? And you know what? I think it's important to never stop dreaming. It's okay to doubt yourself and to wonder, will I ever amount to anything or will I ever have what I dream for or what I wish I had? That's normal stuff. But I just want to say, never give up on yourself. Never stop dreaming. When we started the company and we began to sell pretzels so fast, it totally blew me away. I didn't know this was going to happen. And when we opened our second store, I began to dream. And I saw pretzels everywhere because I knew. And that's the other part. The other point is, Josh, and you know as well, you have to have a really great product. If you're going to really do well and succeed, it doesn't have to be better than the other guy out there, but you have to believe that it's the very best product out there. And I began to dream. And I love a quote that I read not too long ago that said, your dreams will get you started, but your discipline will get you there. So We all dream. And that's also a part of my book, You Can Overcome and Lead, is the perseverance and the discipline. And you know, in the last couple of years, it took all of that for you to actually launch and get up again and, I don't know, start over or whatever that was for you. But it's great to dream. Everybody dreams. The dream without the discipline, you will never go anywhere. And that's why I'm grateful that I grew up on a farm where mom and dad told me to push through and never stop, never give up. Don't stop until the task is done. And that's what we learned on the farm. And so perseverance is what I learned, discipline, whatever you want to call it. But perseverance, what I believe that my simple definition for that is successful entrepreneurs are those who will do what other people don't feel like doing. How many times did you get up in the morning and say, I don't know. I don't think I can do this another day. But perseverance, you'll never stop. And someone who's weak or just doesn't have that drive, discouraged when they stop and they never really accomplish their dreams. So you just can't be successful without discipline and perseverance. Impossible.
I want to dig directly into the book. There was this idea that I think attaches to what you just said, and it's about activating authenticity and leadership, which is an interesting concept because, again, if we go back to imposter syndrome, right, you can look inside yourself and say, man, there are all of these things that I don't know. As a leader, there are like millions and millions of things that you don't know. But the few things that you know to be true, are enough for you to lead and scale this company.
Absolutely. You don't need everything that you read about in the books, but your experience and the few things that you know, I love that.
It is. So if we look at your career to exemplify this, leveraging authenticity and leadership, what were the things that you knew?
Well, what I knew, you take your whole self into your business workplace every day. All of you goes with you. So what I knew early on as the founder and CEO of Auntie Anne's was that I had to take all of me into the workplace. And I know authenticity is probably not a, I don't know that most people even think about being real in the workplace, but it was instinctively inside of me. I had lived with deception and secrets and lies, and I knew what that did to me. So I decided when I go into business, I'm going to be real. And, you know, being real, the real you is actually the best gift that you can give to the whole world. So what is the real you? And I began to understand and unpack in my own life and my own heart, the internal part of who I was so broken. And so I had no confidence. I mean, seriously, I was in and over my head, but I determined that instead of hiding behind success and people see the external, that's the world that we create. We want people to see, but the internal life for me was what was holding me back. And early on in the Auntie Anne's, I realized that, man, I got to be transparent. I got to be open and honest about who I really am. And do you do that with the whole company? Not really. You do with a few people on your team. You talk about your struggles and you talk about what's going on in your life. And I gave my employees permission to be real and to talk to me about any issues that they had in their life. So authenticity, really, it sounds almost too personal. But I think that when you teach your people to be open, honest, and transparent, and you try to manage that in your workplace, as far as how do you teach your people to do that, I think that over time, your company becomes this, it's like inviting. I mean, you're like a magnet because people want truth and they want transparency and they want you to be real. Who likes to be around fake people? I don't know. I don't think we understand the power of that in the business world. If we can all be open, honest, and transparent. And so the SALT, the acronym for SALT is share your story, activate authenticity. And that starts with me. If I want you to be authentic, it starts with me as the leader and the owner of the company. I need to activate that. And that means activate it in my life and then employees, team members, and department heads all across the country. And then L is lead into intuition. And that's the other part that I feel like a lot of people just kind of, they don't understand the power of that, the intuition. I'm telling you, we built a company with a product and a lot of faith, a lot of hard work. But there were times, many times in my life, in the business life, that it was a gut feeling that I had. You cannot underestimate the intuition that all of us are, we all have it, but to activate it is really important. And then T for SALT is trust courageously.
I want to unpack a couple of other things that you mentioned. To start with, I want to talk about trusting intuition and listening to your intuition. Easier said than done. It's so interesting because I have never gone with my gut and been led astray. Having said that, I can list countless times I haven't gone with my gut, which is just a really interesting dichotomy.
Yeah, absolutely.
How do you hone that skill of listening to it, knowing its truth, and then acting upon it?
Honestly, everything is trial and error because it's like anything else. For me, I didn't actually trust my intuition because of my crazy past at times. I didn't trust myself. But I'm telling you, there were a number of times when intuition, I call it a gut feeling. I mean, I know that's not professional at all, but it's kind of like you have a number of things that you go through. Like when you make a decision, you gather all the information, you gather the facts, you take your time with, for example, if you want to, you feel like there's an employee that you're not sure about, maybe you feel like you might should fire them or you're not sure. So you gather all the facts, you disseminate the information that you get, and then you take a little bit of time. And for me, faith has always been a part of my life. So I would pray about it for a little while. And I'd sit on all of that and think about it. Never made a rash decision. And when I couldn't get the answer in any of those four steps, very often I would get this feeling, this gut feeling, and it would always be right. It was always right. And I would take that sometimes to my team. And just because you have that intuition, an idea, a thought that you need to follow through with, you can take that to the team. You may have a lot of pushback because it may not look right or feel right to them. So leadership is not for weak-minded people. And it's not about bullying people either, but it's about being strong and being sure and developing yourself, developing the intuition, and practice it. If you follow your intuition and then you make a mistake and it's not the right idea or it didn't pan out well, then you go back to your people and apologize. Hey guys, I thought this was right, but obviously we made the wrong choice. So that didn't happen very often for us, but there were times. But mostly my intuition was right almost every single time. For example, we were doing Auntie Anne's and the franchisees. Do you know much about franchising?
I do.
Yeah. And so you understand franchisees. We had a great, great franchisees. But after every once in a while, over time, their voice gets pretty big and there's more of them than there are of us. So they really wanted another product in the company. And so we brought another product in the company against my intuition. And I kept saying and feeling, guys, I don't feel right about this, but I want to trust my team. That's a big part of leadership as well. I want to trust you. And so we'll do this. And sure enough, we lost a few million dollars. So intuition doesn't mean I'm the boss, I got to do it my way. It just means I think leaders, we need to grow. We need to learn how to be great listeners to our team. We don't always have to be right, but we have to be strong. And we have to learn how to communicate in ways that doesn't demean or bully or make people feel bad. And over time, Josh, I learned how to do that pretty well. But you know, you're always learning how to be better.
I want to talk about one of the other values. I want to talk about trusting courageously. Where I see this manifesting more often than not and failing epically is in delegation. I think that I coach a bunch of restaurateurs. I own multiple locations, and mainly what I coach on are the mistakes that I made, right? A bunch of decisions that I did well and way more mistakes that other people should avoid. And one of the things that stifled my career in the early years was this fallacy that delegation would never work out. It was this fear around trusting. I did not trust courageously because I would trust the wrong person and I would delegate to that person and it would not work out well. And rather than blaming the person, or more appropriately, blaming myself, I would blame the act of delegation. I would take it all back on myself, plus the big mess that they had created. And then I would trudge forward until I was at burnout, at which point I would delegate to the wrong person again, and so on and so forth. Trusting courageously is the only path to scale.
It really is, if you can learn to do that. Delegation is a delicate subject, really. And yet, Josh, if you don't delegate, you cannot grow. you cannot grow your company. My experience with that was I was at about maybe 50 stores. I don't know. I learned there was a whole lot happened between 15 and 50 stores. I mean, internally for me, externally for the companies. So much happened in just a few short years. But delegating, I burned myself out. So with about 50 stores, I mean, that didn't sound like a whole lot, but within 3 years, we had that many stores or more. I'm a farm girl. I'm a doer. I mean, just give me a task and I'll do it for you. And that was really my mindset. So my goal was to visit every store, and it was to, we had delegated, we had trainers and we had financial people and we had the franchise wing of the company. We had all of that. But what I wanted to do was I wanted to visit all the stores. I still want to be part of all the training. I want to be part of all the hiring. Huh. I mean, come on. That's the most important piece of all. I wanted to be on every interview. Finally, when I was at about 50 stores, I had somebody come into my office and they said to me, "So how are you doing today?" And, you know, my answer was always, "I'm doing just great." Isn't that what you're supposed to say? I mean, you're successful on the outside. Everything looks great. And I didn't want to blow my cover. But anyway, this guy, a great man that supported us in a great way. And then he just came right up really close to me and said, "So I really do wonder, how is Ann Myler doing today?" And all I could do was, oh man, that's all I took. I just nearly had a meltdown. But in that moment, Josh, I realized, and he helped me understand, he's not a businessman. He was actually a very good pastor that we had. And in that moment, he just kind of pulled me aside and said, "Well, let me tell you something. If you would learn to use your gifts and talents in the company and let other people do what you don't have time for, you don't feel like doing, you're not good at, then you focus on using your gift and your talent." And he said, "It's all about people for you. It's really all about people. So interject yourself everywhere that you can when it's important. You know, maybe you want to be part of the hiring process, but at the very end. Or maybe you want to go visit stores and see everybody. But once the store's up and running, you don't need to be part of the training." Anyway, so I began to figure out what my most important role was. And it was simply, and that forced me then to delegate. I still had it in my head, I want to do it all. But it forced me to delegate. But I think though, Josh, when you have good people around you, I always watch people very carefully. And we hired for, when we get promotions, we would often hire from within. But I watch people very closely. And so when you delegate, you know, as well as I know, it's really important that you know this person. They got to have a track record of maturity. They got to have a track record that you can count on them. They need to be a person of their word. They don't need to be blamers and whiners and complainers. And they need to be responsible, mature people when you delegate. And so, yeah, I was forced and I did it kind of willingly, but at the same time, oh, I was nervous and I was afraid. When I gave somebody a complete, "This is your department. You run it according to Gandhian standards. I trust you." And it really worked out well for me. It really did. In time, I worked myself out of a job, nearly. It's very amazing because then you're free to be the leader of your organization. And that comes in time. That's not when you have one store or you just start up. But in time, when you're growing your company, you work yourself out of a job. But that's when you can impact and influence the whole company through your leadership. And that's what leadership is. You know that. It's all about influence.
Was there any fear associated with that, though? If I'm not actively doing this, then what am I going to do? And if I'm not responsible for this, then what purpose do I hold? What value do I add to this company that I built?
All of those things, they're very real fears for me. But when I began to focus, honestly, on my gifts, what am I really good at? And I wasn't good at a whole lot of things. I was really good at making a pretzel. I was really good at serving customers. I was really good at keeping the store clean, the doing part of everything. But leadership is about being. And so there was a lot of fear and intimidation. And to actually hand it over to somebody, we actually, at one time, I became pretty good at delegating because we actually were able to give them a job description. This is what it means for you to delegate the franchise department or whatever. So over time, it got easy. But yes, initially, very intimidating. And I'm trying to think of a time when it really backfired on me. Story is not coming to my mind, but I know there were times when we'd give people the responsibilities and it didn't work out for them. But rather than letting them hang around for a couple of years and trying to figure it out, if you see it's not working, then kindly and respectfully, you value the person, but we got to talk about this. This is not a good fit for you. So that's what I mean by communicating well, being mature, and taking responsibility for the decisions that I make. But, you know, the buck stops here. Every mistake in the company, I couldn't blame that on anybody. But what we could do is we could resolve as we met and we talked about the issue that were in front of us. But it's my responsibility at the end of the day.
In the book, you talk about how honoring God is this central part of leadership for you, which I think that we've seen in business, in and outside this industry. At times, that can make things incredibly inclusive. And at times, it can alienate people. How has your faith informed the overall culture at Auntie Anne's? And how do you do it in a way that invites everyone to the table?
I would say it really starts with kindness. It starts with respect. My goal was always you hire good people that are qualified for the job. It doesn't matter what the ethnicity is or the cultural background or any of that. To me, it was, are you qualified? And so that was really how we manage who we hire and how we do that. And to me, honoring God is really the action piece of that, is respecting people. It's loving others. It's caring for people. It's treating them fairly. Honoring God is really, for me, it was, how am I treating people? So I felt like the part of that was to give to my employees. It was to be able to share with them, care about my employees in many ways. But the ultimate was to be able to give of our profits to the employees. So I think honoring God is treating people with respect. And the other thing that I learned early on was that I really felt, I love this part of my story, but I really felt compelled, really knew for sure, my husband and I knew, that Auntie Anne's was created to be light. What do I mean by light? I mean, just, we're not going to be a shady business. We're going to be people of our word. We're going to treat people with respect. We're going to do things in the light. And in that way, when you see a light anywhere, you're attracted to it. So what I discovered is that light doesn't say a word. It just shines. Salt, which we mentioned earlier, doesn't speak. It just makes things tasty. So I took that. That was the internal part of one of the revelations that I had, was to be light and to be salt and to honor God and all of that. It meant that I needed to respect everyone in the company. And yet at the same time, I honestly, for the almost 20 years that we owned the company, I would talk about God. We would pray with people, but I was clearly not an evangelist. I just wanted to be light and I wanted to be salt. And that meant for me, I don't have to say everything I think. My opinion maybe doesn't matter in that conversation. And I learned how to listen more and observe more than to just be really quick with all my words and all my opinions. That's kind of me. That was my MO. But I learned, because of this salt and light concept, that I need to work on the internal part of me. And when it's appropriate, we'll just bring God into the picture as a part, because he's part of my life. So, and I never had any pushback on that. And I feel like if we're salty and we're light-filled, I don't know, it's a good way to live.
When you look back on your journey today, what's one piece of advice you wish you had received when starting the company that the folks listening could benefit from today?
Well, I think we may have touched on this a little bit, but I wish somebody would have told me how to be professional. That's one thing. I didn't know anything about the corporate life. And so I think that one of the things that I would encourage people just starting up is to learn from other people. And one thing, another really important part, is communicate well. Learn how to communicate well. Another thing is, don't take your personal vendettas or your anger and your all the things that you hate about yourself or you're frustrated with the whole world. Don't take all of that into the world and be verbal about it, but just go into the place with a positive attitude, a positive spirit, a smile on your face and pat people on the back and let them know how important they are to you. I didn't know all of those things at the very beginning, but loving your people and communicating well with them, to me, that's some of the most important pieces that you can take into your company. It's really simple to do. You don't need to be highly educated to do that, but you just need to love people and be a great example when it comes to communicating. And I don't think I was a very good communicator initially. I love people, but I was not a very good communicator. Learn how to be a good communicator and understand, if you're a leader, it's really about influencing people, and learn how to do that. Read a book about leadership. Find out what your role is. What are you doing? and inform, read books and find out what it is that you're doing.
Our industry suffers from razor-thin margins, and the only way for us to ensure profitability is to make data-driven decisions. The numbers don't lie, and Yelp for Restaurants just released some incredibly compelling numbers. For starters, Yelp reaches 9 times more customers online than OpenTable. And when restaurants pair that level of visibility with Guest Manager and Yelp ads, they experience up to an 8% lift in diner bookings. Think about what that 8% lift could do for your restaurant's finances. To learn more about how Yelp for Restaurants can support your business, visit restaurants.yelp.com/full comp to learn more today. To check out our book, look for Overcome and Lead wherever books are sold. If you want to tell us your story, hear previous episodes, or check out our other content, go to restaurants.yelp.com/full comp. Thank you so much for listening to the show. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. While you're there, please leave us a review. A special thanks to Yelp for helping us spread the word to the whole hospitality community. I'm Josh Kopel. You've been listening to Full Comp.